From WBUR in Boston, it's Weekly Warm-Up, a sampling of the cornucopia of stories and interviews featured on Only a Game, sports public radio style.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Visa, offering the Visa Signature Card, featuring concierge services for travel, dining, and entertainment at visasignature.com.
Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Some stories probably should be told again and again. They're stories characterized by drama, otherwise we would tire of them, but they are not stories that depend on suspense for their impact. We know how these stories turn out. They are stories that remind us of truths we should not forget, and more often than not, they're stories of suffering. Opening Day, Jonathan Eig's new book about Jackie Robinson's first season with the Brooklyn Dodgers, presents such a story. According to Eig's account, not only was Robinson barred from hotels where his teammates were staying, he was resented by many of the men who shared the dugout and clubhouse with him. If Branch Rickey was sure that baseball was ready for integration, lots of the other people in the Dodger organization were not, and they made no secret of their resentment and dismay when progress arrived at the ballpark. Still, what ballplayer besides Babe Ruth has been written about more often than Jackie Robinson? His story is well known, even if in some of the tellings there has been some fiction mixed in with the fact. I had to begin my conversation with Jonathan Eig by asking him why he chose to write a book about Robinson's experience.
Well, I wanted to strip away the fiction, first of all, and figure out where the fact really began and ended. And I also thought that by crystallizing the story in one season, 1947, you could really get at the core of Robinson's legend. You can really figure out what he meant to America in that very specific amount of time. And you had the great fun of following a terrific baseball team on the race for a pennant. So I fell in love with the story.
You write that when Jackie Robinson first entered the Dodger clubhouse, only two members of the team walked over to shake his hand. One of them was Ralph Branca, and the other was Gene Hermansky. How did you learn that?
That was a detail that Robinson himself gave to one of the black writers covering the story that day. A lot of the white papers didn't really cover the game too well and buried the story about integration altogether, but the black papers in the country were all over it. They covered every detail. They even reported on who sat next to Robinson in the dugout that day. They were looking for every angle.
You write that when Robinson took the field for Brooklyn for the first time, quote, the sight jolted some of the spectators as if a man in shoulder pads and a football helmet had run across the baseball diamond. But hadn't fans in Brooklyn been pretty well prepared for Robinson's debut?
Not so much, actually. You know, he'd been down in Cuba training in spring training, and even then it was not clear whether he would make the team. On April 10th, when Branch Rickey finally announced it, it was just 5 days before opening day, and even then, Rickey did not say whether Robinson would be his starting first baseman. So fans came out to the ballpark. They knew that Robinson was a part of the team yet, but they hadn't expected they weren't sure whether they were going to see him or not, and they had never seen anything like it. They'd never seen a black man in a Dodger uniform.
At least one of the people, former Brooklyn residents whom you quote in the book, suggests that Brooklyn was the perfect place for this integration to occur. Explain to me the reasoning behind that contention.
Well, Brooklyn was a place for strivers. It was a place for immigrants, and everybody there wanted better than what they had. And in that respect, they could identify with Jackie Robinson. They might not have known much about African-American culture. They might not have known what it felt like to be exposed to the kind of racism that Jackie was. But Italians, Irishmen, Jews, they all knew what it was like to be a minority. And as soon as Robinson started to prove himself as a Dodger, first of all, they were so passionate about the Dodgers that he became a bum. And that, in some ways, trumped his color. But in another way, he represented all of those people who were trying to make something better of their lives.
Red Barber, who had initially wondered if he could continue broadcasting Dodgers games when Branch Rickey pulled him aside and told him that Robinson would be joining the team, came up with a wonderful phrase, I thought, to describe the rookie on that first day.
I love this. It's one of my favorite details. He didn't refer to Jackie's race. He said, Jackie Robinson is definitely a brunette. That's poetry.
One of the most oft-told stories about Robinson is that on one particularly tough day, Pee Wee Reese, the Dodgers shortstop, walked across the infield and put his arm around Robinson's shoulders in order to show fans his support for his teammate, even though Pee Wee was a Southerner, grew up in Kentucky. My goodness, this has been everywhere, in a children's book and everywhere else. Were you able to confirm that that event actually happened?
Sadly, no. I can certainly say that Pee Wee Reese was out front among the Dodgers in embracing Robinson, that he was a very good friend of Robinson over the years. But in 1947, it's hard to tell whether Pee Wee was sort of waiting and watching like the other guys or whether he made any overt gestures. But that particular one in 1947 does not appear to be backed up with any contemporaneous evidence. There are no pictures. There are no newspaper accounts from 1947. In fact, Robinson, right after the game in Cincinnati where this was supposed to have happened, told one of the black reporters that he was thrilled by how well he was received by the crowd. So there's no indication that there was even any taunting going on that day.
During that first year, Jackie Robinson roomed with Wendell Smith, a black newspaper writer whom Branch Rickey had hired. In fact, Rickey was paying him the same salary that his newspaper was paying him. What were Mr. Smith's duties with the Dodgers?
Wendell Smith had many duties. One of them, before Jackie Robinson came to the team, was scouting for Branch Rickey, and he's the guy who said, "You should take a look at this Jackie Robinson kid." And Branch Rickey said, "You mean the football player from UCLA?" But once Jackie started playing with the Dodgers, Wendell Smith had to chaperone him around town. He had to find hotels for him to stay when they went to certain cities like St. Louis, where Jackie wasn't welcomed in the white-only hotels. He had to find restaurants. He had to find black taxi cabs that would drive Robinson around town. And he was also Robinson's ghostwriter, I should mention, that Robinson had a weekly column in the Pittsburgh Courier, and Wendell Smith wrote it for him.
Smith, of course, faced his own problems. Even after Robinson integrated Major League Baseball, some of the press boxes were not open to Smith.
That's right. Wendell Smith had to cover these games often from the stands because he couldn't get into the press boxes. Only in the World Series did he finally get a press pass, and he was very proud. He began all his columns from the World Series with the dateline, not from Yankee Stadium, but from Press Box Yankee Stadium, because he wanted to tell his readers that he, too, like Jackie Robinson, had broken through that color barrier.
You present the experiences of a number of people who saw Jackie Robinson play back in 1947. One of the most powerful of those experiences involves Douglas Wilder, who eventually became the governor of Virginia.
Yes, this is a wonderful story. Doug Wilder was 14 years old at the time and a huge St. Louis Cardinals fan living in Richmond. And he heard that some of the older guys in town, guys who hung around the barber shop in his neighborhood, were driving to Brooklyn to see Jackie Robinson play. And it happened to be a game against the Cardinals, so he asked if he could come along. He really didn't care much about going to see Jackie Robinson, didn't appreciate that, but he was a 14-year-old baseball fan and wanted to see his favorite team, Stan Musial and Enos Slaughter, Red Shaneyeast. So he talked these guys into squeezing into the back seat of the car. And one of the guys in the barbershop said he was the talkingest kid you've ever seen. He could have convinced us to do anything. Those political skills would come in handy. But he gets to the game, and he watches a terrific ball game. And in extra innings, Enos Slaughter, one of his favorite players, comes down the line and spikes Jackie Robinson in the back of the foot. And it appears to many people in the crowd, it appeared to Jackie Robinson and it appeared to Doug Wilder, that it was intentional, that he'd done this with intent to harm. And suddenly, Doug Wilder says, it was as if a light bulb had gone off in his head that he'd been rooting for the wrong team, that the Cardinals were not his team. They were not playing for him, but Jackie Robinson was. Jackie Robinson was playing for his people and for his future. And he said that it was a powerful, powerful moment that he never forgot.
On opening day this season, the current Dodgers all wore number 42. All the major league teams have retired number 42 in honor of Jackie Robinson's achievement. There may have been a time when younger players weren't aware of what Robinson accomplished, but has baseball sufficiently addressed that problem?
I think baseball has done a great job of honoring Robinson's legacy, and they should be very proud of it. It's not too many sports that can say that they were out front in a movement as important as civil rights to this country. You know, the war had just ended in 1947. We were still deciding what kind of a democracy we wanted to be, and baseball helped show where we could go with this, what kind of country we could become. I think it should be a national holiday.
It seems to me that you're right. Major League Baseball certainly has celebrated Jackie Robinson. It's ironic, I suppose, that the percentage of black players is decreasing every season.
It is ironic. At the same time, the diversity of the game has never been better in many ways. You know, we've got players from all over the world. We've got players of all different skin colors and accents. And I think Robinson would be pleased by that. He may still have been a little upset about the he may still be very upset about the number of blacks in management and in ownership, But on the field, it's still a pretty diverse game.
Jonathan Eig is the author of Opening Day, the story of Jackie Robinson's first season, published by Simon & Schuster. He joined me from the NPR studios in New York. Jonathan, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you.
My conversation with Jonathan Eig will be featured on Saturday's program. We'll also be examining the resolution of Don Imus v. members of the Rutgers women's basketball team, and you can count on Charlie Pierce contributing to that discussion. We'll have a story courtesy of Only a Game's Karen Given of an organization that has dedicated itself to producing an American winner for this year's Boston Marathon, which will be run on Monday. I'll discuss the surprising success of the Toronto Raptors with Stephen Brunt, who's been covering the team this season, and we'll have a story of some coaches who are trying to ascend to the NBA via service in the NBDL, basketball's minor league. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program on our website, onlyagame.org.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new 240-horsepower turbocharged Acura RDX. More at acura.com/RDX.